ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. Nice to be with you. It's Wednesday, the 11th of February. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, pomp, ceremony, and protest follow the Israeli president's visit to Canberra today. And what it sounds like when K-pop inspires kids to take up dance classes to show how it's done.
The world will know you as pop stars.
As soon as the Demon Hunters movie came out, the numbers just blew up and exploded. We've been doing K-pop for about 2 years now. Korean music, it's just a big phenomenon at the moment. This is what it sounds like.
Israeli President Isaac Herzog has touched down in Canberra, receiving a ceremonial welcome at Government House. He's also visiting Parliament House today before heading to Melbourne later this week. But the fallout continues over protests against his visit amid accusations of police brutality. Alison Shaw has the story.
From the river to the sea,
Palestine will be free.
Slogans and signs like "Arrest Herzog" are following the Israeli president around the country as he makes his way to Canberra this morning. Protesters gathered on the lawns of Parliament House to show their opposition to Isaac Herzog's visit.
Herzog is far from a passive head of state. He has spent his career dehumanising Palestinians.
Elsewhere in town, the president was welcomed by Governor-General Sam Mostyn and Prime Minister Anthony Albanese at Government House. But in Sydney, fallout from violent clashes between police and demonstrators outside Town Hall on Monday continues. Authorities have come under fire after videos showing some officers punching protesters and forcibly moving on a group of Muslim men who were praying. One 69-year-old woman told the ABC she suffered 4 broken vertebrae after being pushed to the ground. 16-year-old Nadal says his face was pushed into the ground by officers.
I was holding my sister's baby bag and then all of a sudden they push her and she has a baby. I told them she has a baby. So as I said that, they just grabbed me by the kufiya, my scarf, and just dragged me, pulled me, kicked me on the floor, knee to my head, knee to my neck. And then, just put me in handcuffs.
Nadal was one of those arrested and later released without charge. The state's premier and police commissioner have repeatedly defended the actions of officers. Nadal's mother, Kefa, who grew up in the West Bank, says the reaction from Premier Chris Minns has been disappointing.
This is a reckless kind of response, to be honest. It was really, it was a war zone. When I was looking around me, I did not believe my eyes that I live in Australia.
But authorities aren't backing down. New South Wales Police Minister Yasmin Catley saying hostile protesters who were intent on marching in a breach of the state government's current rules were the ones who escalated the situation.
2/3 of people dispersed quite peacefully. It was those who deliberately went there to pick a fight, to create violence on our streets. And unfortunately, those innocent people that got caught up in that, they definitely had no regard for them, that's for sure.
The New South Wales Greens have called for the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission to investigate. And Australia's federal Islamophobia envoy, Afdab Malik, is calling on the New South Wales Premier and police to apologise. Meanwhile, civil rights groups continue to express their outrage.
What we saw in Sydney was shocking and distressing.
Timothy Roberts is president of the New South Wales Council for Civil Liberties.
The environment that has been created by the Premier is the recipe for disaster here that he should be held accountable for. While I'm sure, as with any human behaviour, there might be individuals that have behaved badly here, ultimately we have the police force representing state physical power being sent down to suppress and interact with protesters. The Premier doesn't get to create the environment here, the absolutely fractious and adversarial environment here, and also trying to dictate to protesters when and where they can't assemble.
Nationwide protests have been held this week against the Israeli president's visit, with more planned in the coming days. Organisers argue President Herzog, who was found by a UN commission of inquiry to have incited the commission of genocide in Gaza, shouldn't be welcomed in Australia. Israel strongly rejects the finding, while President of the Zionist Federation, Jeremy Liebler, has continued to defend the Israeli president's visit, arguing that the protesters are a fringe minority.
People are entitled to have their views on the conflict. This is not a visit that is about the conflict or the war in Gaza between Hamas and Israel. This is a visit to pay respects and support following the Bondi attack.
The Israeli president is expected to finish his tour of Australia tomorrow.
Alison Chow and David Sparks with that report. While staying in Canberra, speculation is swirling about the future of opposition leader Susan Lee, with reports Liberal frontbenchers are preparing for a mass resignation in order to support Angus Taylor in his bid for the leadership. Angus Taylor would need to quit the frontbench in order to mount a challenge, something he's expected to do today. Bridget Fitzgerald.
As someone who was once at the centre of a Liberal Party leadership fight himself, former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has a message for Angus Taylor. Put up or shut up.
I mean, if Taylor wants to be leader, he should stand up and say he wants to be leader, say why, and those people who support him should stand up and take responsibility for it.
But with the ongoing uncertainty and declining electoral support for the Liberals, Malcolm Turnbull says the real problem facing the party is that it's drifted away from the centre of Australian politics.
They're fighting culture wars and, you know, basically chasing Pauline Hanson down a right-wing populist borough, and no wonder her vote is ahead of theirs. They've got to get back to the centre and talk about things that Australians are concerned about.
Over the weekend, Victorian Liberal MP Tim Wilson said Susan Lee had his support. Speaking to the ABC today, the Shadow Minister for Industrial Relations and Employment wouldn't comment on the leadership speculation.
I absolutely believe that something's got to give, and it's focus. Australians want to see us focused, which is on them.
New South Wales Liberal Senator and Shadow Housing Minister Andrew Bragg also refused to be drawn on the potential leadership contest. He says no leadership issues were raised at the party room meeting on Tuesday.
I think it's best that we move on. I mean, we're going to be marked down if we fail to do our job. We've got two jobs: hold the government to account and develop our own policies. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next few months.
Andrew Bragg, who's generally been a supporter of Susan Lee, conceded the opposition leader has had a bad few months.
We had a cataclysmic election loss. We've had two bust-ups with the Nats. We haven't had a chance to really put out many policies yet. And I think when we start to do that on things like housing and migration and red tape reduction and other things to do with small business, I think that you will start to see some improvements.
Liberal Senator for New South Wales Dave Sharma says he supports Susan Lee as leader and wants the debate sorted.
Well, I think it's important that we put the leadership issue to rest. You know, we owe that to the public, we owe that to ourselves, we owe that to the people who support us, but we also owe it more broadly to the people of Australia, because I recognise that as long as this goes on for, it is an immense distraction and we're not able to do our job as an opposition properly.
He says he's frustrated with the current state of the coalition.
You know, I wouldn't quite say despairing, but, you know, it does trouble me, because I don't think Australia is being well run at the moment. I think we have a lot of national problems and national issues, and it is our job as an opposition to highlight those and to put forward alternative ideas to address those. And at the moment, we're not doing as good a job of that as we should be. I do hope we can put this issue behind us one way or the other very soon and move on.
The coalition has only recently reunited after a brief and messy split that saw the Liberals and Nationals sit separately in Parliament last week. Nationals leader David Littleproud told Sky News it wasn't his place to comment on the leadership.
We couldn't work with Susan Lee until she reinstated our three ministers, and she's done that. And we've also been able to secure a coalition change that'll ensure this never happens, so that we do have a voice, we do have a forum, and she did that. But I can't give any commentary because I'm not in the Liberal Party.
If Angus Taylor is to mount a leadership challenge, he must first resign from the front bench.
Bridget Fitzgerald. Well, experts are warning there's no end in sight for the rental crisis, prompting fresh calls for action to help struggling Australians. New analysis shows rental affordability is at record lows, with costs increasing at more than double the rate of wages over the past 5 years. Here's Stephanie Smale.
For 78-year-old pensioner Paula Swan, the looming rent increase on her Port Macquarie apartment is a major worry.
We've got the rental contract ending in April, and if they put them up at the end of April, well, I'm going to have to move out because I can't afford to have that extra cost on me.
If the rent does go up, she'll have to move in with a friend interstate, but she would prefer to live independently.
I've registered with housing and I've registered with real estate people, but they just say that there's nothing available in the low range for a one-bedroom unit. They're all up in the, $400 a week, and I don't know what the other 75 people in the units are going to do. And everyone is really concerned. I mean, some of these people are in their 80s. What are they going to do?
The picture isn't any rosier for Australian tenants still earning a wage either. Analysis by property research firm Cotality shows an unprecedented spike in rents over the past 5 years, with wages lagging far behind. Rents have gone up by about 44% since 2020, the equivalent of more than $200 a week on average. But wages aren't keeping up, only increasing by an average of about 17%. Tenants Queensland CEO Penny Carr says many tenants are getting hit with rent increases every year.
They are getting these back-to-back increases, or they're making difficult choices to move out and they're going into another property, usually at a very high starting rent as well.
What sort of pressure is it putting on renters?
It's putting enormous pressure on people individually and households. They're having to make very difficult decisions about whether they look for another property or they're going to just see if they can make it through on the new agreement with this increase that's often very unaffordable for them. So it's very stressful out there for renters.
She argues limiting rent increases should be a serious consideration, saying it would help push inflation down too.
Large rent increases also put pressure on interest rates because rent forms quite a large component of the basket of goods that impacts on the consumer price index.
Look, I think in a situation like this, we need to see a national government treat this like a national emergency.
Fiona Cornelia is the CEO of peak housing body Q Shelter. She acknowledges the work already underway by all levels of government, the private sector and not-for-profit groups to ease housing pressures. But she argues a new nationally coordinated plan is needed. And she agrees a limit on rent increases would be a big help too, pointing out Cotality's report shows the ACT is the only state where the gap between wages and rent isn't growing.
And it's interesting to note that the ACT does put a limit on how much rent can be increased, and it's matched to CPI. And so I think that's a really important lesson for everywhere else in Australia that could help.
Fiona Cornelia says more work needs to be done on speeding up housing construction too.
We need affordable homes in the rental market. We need build to rent so that people have better security of tenure. And we really need to see social and affordable housing keeping pace with emerging community needs.
Federal government figures show Australia is expected to fall more than 260,000 homes short of its target to build 1.2 million new homes by 2029.
That's Stephanie Smail there. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Bones, teeth and a Honda car key belonging to a missing Belgian tourist have been found by a specialist police search team in the remote Tasmanian wilderness. Celine Cremer went missing in 2023, today's discovery giving hope that her remains can one day be returned to her family. Our reporter Alexandra Humphreys has been following this story. Ali, what have police said about this latest discovery?
Well, Celine Cremer had been travelling around Tasmania in 2023 when she disappeared after she went for a short bushwalk at a place called Philosopher's Falls, which is just outside the small northwest town of Waratah. So she didn't board the Spirit of Tasmania as she'd planned to a few days later, and that's when a really large police search began. And so during that search, they found her car was parked at the start of the trail there, but they didn't manage to find any other trace of her at that time in 2023. Then last year in December, some of Celine Cremer's friends, family and some local volunteers started a new search, And during that effort, they managed to find her phone and they found some other items that they think may belong to her as well, a water bottle, something they think she may have used as a shelter. And so based on the location of those items, a volunteer went searching again in January this year and they found human bones about 3 kilometres from the trail. So after that, police decided to renew their search efforts for Celine Cromer, and they've been focusing really on a section of the really wild Arthur River, which is surrounded by extremely dense bushland. So they've said they've been combing the area essentially in what they've described as a detailed and methodical intensive search this week. And Andy, it's in an area really that is so difficult to access that the specialist officers they've been using needed to be winched in by helicopter to get there, and the weather conditions meant that they couldn't be winched out when they planned to either. So during this effort this week, they've found more human remains. They've found some teeth, but crucially, they've found a car key, and they have confirmed now that that car key does belong to Celine Cromer's car. So police are saying now that it is likely that those remains that they have found are Celine. Police Commander Nathan Johnston explained that the search conditions have been extremely difficult.
It's really challenging. This is in a river, and the rivers down the west coast can go from metres to millimetres. So decent rain comes through there, it makes really challenging, and now this has been 2.5 year period with different rains, different flow levels in the river. So we'll do everything we can to find as much as we can if this is Celine, and give that back to her mother.
That's Tasmanian Police Commander Nathan Johnston there. So Ali, what's likely to happen next in this case?
Well, Andy, those human remains that have been found do need to go through quite an extensive forensic analysis before they can be confirmed as belonging to Celine. So it's not yet clear. Police weren't able to tell us today how long they think that's going to take. But we do know that her dental records have been sourced and they're being sent from Belgium. So once that happens, the coroner will then need to formally declare that the remains belong to Celine, and that will happen before the case can be closed.
Alexandra Humphreys there. Well, one camel in your backyard can cause a lot of damage. Hundreds of them are a bit of a disaster. Remote communities in South Australia and the Northern Territory have been overwhelmed by a mass migration of feral camels seeking water. The creatures have destroyed infrastructure, shutting down a school and creating a massive headache for locals, as Angus Randall reports.
There are many reasons a school can be shut down. Severe weather, a teacher's strike, or in Central Australia, a camel invasion. Stuart Bickley is an operations manager working across the APY lands in South Australia's far north.
There was a school there. They actually got into the school area and they've done a lot of damage there. They've damaged all the air conditioning, handrails. That's the photos I've seen. And there was approximately 10 dead camel carcasses laying around the school there as well.
In recent weeks, there's been a mass influx of feral camels moving down from the Northern Territory, causing destruction in their search for water. NT Environment Minister Josh Burgoyne says it has to be seen to be believed.
It's quite hard, I guess, for people to imagine down south, but there was a small community called Mount Liebig of about 156 residents that had some 700 feral camels come into this community looking for water. And these animals can get quite fierce when they're looking for water. They were quite literally walking through people's fences and ripping taps off buildings to get to water, and in some instances actually damaging the water main. So this meant that there were some 11 homes in that community that were actually without water.
There are up to 1 million feral camels in Central Australia. There was a big cull around 15 years ago, but numbers have bounced back. The camels are moving south after months of drought, and many don't make it. Stuart Bickley says there's one location with more than 100 camel carcasses.
They've gone into there and they've actually all died. So there's, you know, 100 to 150 dead carcasses just laying in that one area there.
A male camel can weigh more than 600 kilograms, so disposing of the carcasses is difficult and expensive. Stuart Bickley says there are ways to keep camels out of communities.
I mean, ideally, and it's been talked about for years, is having set watering points outside of the communities. So basically we have, you know, old, you know, like a rain tank, cut-off rain tank or something like that, that's got a couple of hundred litres of water in it at all times.
Hundreds of camels have been mustered into pens where they're able to access water. But NT Environment Minister Josh Burgoyne says finding a sustainable solution is challenging.
I've had so many people that have got in touch with me saying, you know, this is a resource, we want to be able to harness this. There are a lot of remote communities that might actually be able to muster up some of these camels and ensure that they're actually getting into the meatworks where they might be able to be used for pet meat or other uses. I think it's a really untapped resource. The issue is, and this is something that a lot of people have spoken to me about, they're quite an unruly animal and it's very difficult to transport them long distances.
Some areas in Central Australia have seen a good amount of rain in recent weeks, so the camels will move on. But Josh Burgoyne wants to see a long-term fix.
And if we had a real strategic coordinated approach across jurisdictions, then we could actually deal with this issue, reduce the impact to the environment, and also reduce the impact on our remote communities.
The federal government has pledged $225,000 to support the construction of permanent water tanks away from communities, and the South Australian government is chipping in $200,000. Trent Wilkinson is the general manager of the APY board. He says the money will go to good use.
It goes into those watering points particularly. Obviously there's going to be the clean-up. It's hard and expensive work.
But he warns without significant investment, the camels will keep causing havoc.
The ongoing problem with large feral herbivore, it needs a whole of landscape approach and ongoing resourcing for many years to come. Well, this will come back.
That's APY Board General Manager Trent Wilkinson, Angus Randall and Janae Madden reporting. It's last year's most watched movie on Netflix, and if you don't have kids, you may never have heard of it. K-pop Demon Hunters is about a girl group using music and dance to protect the world from demons. It was a global smash hit and certainly popular in my house. It sparked interest in Australia's once niche K-pop community, with dance studios reporting a surge in enrolments in K-pop classes. ABC reporter Jessica Van Vonderen prepared this report.
It's after 8 p.m. in a brightly lit dance studio, and rehearsals are in full swing.
I'm a travel agent during the day, and then at nighttime I'm a K-pop dancer.
Every week, River Hart drives from the Gold Coast to Brisbane to nurture her passion, K-pop.
I was one of the first groups around in Brisbane, and it's just expanded so much since. We used to hold K-pop classes where people would meet each other, and then it's expanded. So it's been really amazing to see it grow from the very small community to a massive community. Yeah.
She's practicing ahead of this month's BrisAsia Festival, along with scores of other performers under producer Alice Chang. Woo!
All right, I'm going to sing it. 5, 6, 7, 8. Resonate, raise it, resonate.
K-pop is Korean pop. So Korean music, all things K-culture, Korean bands, Korean singers. Yeah.
Do you love it?
Yeah, love it. I think I love it because like it brings the community together more so just the music.
With its trademark girl groups, boy bands, bold fashion and complex choreography, K-pop music already has millions of fans around the world. But its popularity is also on the rise here in Australia, thanks in part to the Netflix blockbuster K-pop Demon Hunters.
The world will know you as pop stars. You will be much more than that.
As soon as the Demon Hunters movie came out, the numbers just blew up and exploded.
Susie Coronado Varanes owns a dance studio in Woolloongabba, offering twice-weekly kids' K-pop classes.
We kind of specialise in international street styles. So we've been doing K-pop for about 2 years now. The Korean fashion, Korean skincare, Korean music, it's just a big phenomenon at the moment and everyone around the world is catching on to it. So I think it's just the modernisation of the culture being spread around. It's really cool. It's a really cool culture to be in.
Right step, left step.
Their teacher, Raina Ju, takes the kids through each move.
Yes, okay. One more time.
And 9-year-old Claire Shee does her best to keep up.
Okay, you get it?
We learnt a dance, I think it was by New Jeans, and it was really fun because I've never learnt that dance before and I've always really wanted to learn it. It was a bit hard at the start because like it's really fast.
13-year-old Vivi Pham Duck doesn't hesitate when asked about her favourite K-pop bands.
I am absolutely in love with BTS and Stray Kids. They work so hard and they write their own songs and they sing and dance and they do it all at the same time and they're so talented.
Whether you're a global superstar or just a legend in your own living room, fans say there is one more positive to K-pop.
It's just something I do as a hobby. But it keeps me fit. I hang out with my friends and, yeah, we all have something in common and it's really fun.
Yeah, lots of fun. K-pop dancer River Hart ending Jessica Van Vonderen's report. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Around 6,000 people had gathered to condemn the visit to Sydney by the Israeli president. There were violent clashes with police after they were ordered to disperse. Today, law professor Luke McNamara from the University of New South Wales on the new protest laws brought in after the Bondi attack and why the Labor government has gone too far. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.